Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of On the Time Lash Extra, where we look at Series 9. This is our chat about Sleep No More by Mark Gatiss, which has just gone out on Saturday. I'm Ben.
I'm Mark, hello.
Hello. Wait, are you saying that to me, or are you saying that
to you, Ben, and to our listeners around the globe, as Nicholas Parsons is so fond of saying.
So this is our Sleep No More episode. But, I mean, you know, also, you kick these little extra episodes off with a kind of the news, the general temperament of Doctor Who. And I'm one day back from Doctor Who Festival at the Excel Centre in London.
I know. I'm excited to hear all about your adventures.
Yeah. So how do I start this? I had a brilliant time. I know this podcast does have a lot of fans because of its inherent cynicism and sarcasm, but I genuinely had a brilliant, wonderful time at that convention. At some points of it, bordering on the almost spiritual. It's
bloody hell!
So I went on my own. So because I bought the ticket for this, what, maybe a year ago. And in that time, I thought you would get a ticket, or some of our other friends, or someone I knew at all would get a ticket, and this never, over the course of a year, happened. So I toddled along on my own, and I was kind of prepared to be a bit underwhelmed and a bit disappointed, and I should probably say as well, bored, because it was basically the same sort of setup as the 50th anniversary at the Excel Centre that we went to.
Right.
And there was a lot of queuing. There was a lot of standing around. There was a lot of killing time between theatre shows. And I'm not saying that when we were there that was boring, but I imagined, you know, me on my own, there would be a lot of stuff. You know, like there's only so many times you can go around the sales room. And look at a lot of stuff that you can't afford and don't need, you know. But I absolutely loved it. The thing about going to these things on your own is that you can do whatever you want for exactly the length of time that you want to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
They had the three main theatre shows, which were great. They were really enjoyable. The problem with the theatre shows is that if the questions are shit, then it can sometimes feel a little stilted.
You mean the audience questions, or do you mean just the general?
No, the audience questions.
Right, yeah,
So the first theatre show was a kind of special effects monsters, that kind of thing, with Mark Gatiss and Kate Walsh from Millennium Effects. Now, she was excellent. Like, she was so enthusiastic. She was great. There were moments when she was explaining how a monster worked, and you could see her getting really wrapped up and kind of explain. It looked like she was explaining it to herself. like she was just really excited and happy to be kind of involved in that. She seemed someone who was very passionate. Then there was the writers' Q&A with Stephen Moffat. So it was different every day, and I had seen Stephen Moffat, Toby Whithouse, and Jamie Matheson.
Oh, excellent!
Brilliant. But Matthew Sweet, who was the host, immediately threw it out to questions to the audience.
Oh.
It was all, "What's your favourite episode? And who's your favourite Doctor?" and when it wasn't that, when it wasn't those really inane, boring questions, which they'd obviously had all the other panels over the course of the weekend, there was a lot of Moffat niggling.
All right.
There was a lot of that. There was one guy in particular. I think his was the last question, actually. And I think he got booed. My recollection, maybe it was just my internal booing mechanism, but my recollection is that he was booed in the audience. A guy, like this kind of older guy, stood up and went, "Mr. Moffat," not a Scottish accent, but I'm going to do it with his voice. "Mr. Moffat, you once gave an interview to the Radio Times that said that Doctor Who fans are clever. Well, it doesn't take a clever Doctor Who fan to work out that if you're not filming again until May, we may not be having a series or a full series in 2016. Do you care to comment?"
Boo!
Boo! Shut up, you cunt. Which is basically, without those words, Moffat's reply. Stephen Moffat, he, when he was answering questions, he could just turn just turned so quickly. He was either incredibly enthusiastic mm-hmm. and it was brilliant, or if he had no time for your question, you were brushed off with some degree of irritation, sometimes anger. He was quite angry at that guy's question, actually, because he went, "Look, do you know what, mate? I've got bosses as well." Right, that's what he said. "Do you know what, mate? I've got bosses as well. I work for the BBC. The BBC decide when Doctor Who is on, not me. And they don't want to comment on anything about what's going to happen for next series because, to be quite honest, they want to keep their schedules secret from ITV because they don't like each other. So that's all you're hearing. I've answered this question." And then, like that, basically, they just kind of wrapped it up and that was the end.
Quite right, though. Quite right. I mean,
The guy phrased it like such a... So dickish.
Yeah.
And there is this attitude that if anything negative happens in Doctor Who, it's because the showrunner has done it deliberately to piss you off.
And it's nothing to do with the logistics of running an incredibly successful television programme. It's nothing to do with, you know, a national broadcaster and how they work.
Well, I mean, do you think really Stephen Moffat has asked Doctor Who for Doctor Who to go out at 8:20, 8:30 on a Saturday? Like, he knows exactly where Doctor Who sits within television, within the family. He's commented on it. He said he would like it to be earlier. So he's not asked for it. The BBC have put it there, mm-hmm. probably as an experiment, thinking, okay, well, we'll move it from tea time and we'll move it up to be like the big drama programme, see how that works. It seems like maybe it's not working, so maybe next year they want to put it on a different time. Probably what will happen, right, and just the vibe that I got, this is not a scoop, there was nothing that was said. I just got the impression that maybe the best place for Doctor Who is kind of earlier in the evening and where it was when it started back in 2005. So we might not at all get any episodes in 2016, but maybe we'll have the full series start again in 2017.
Quite possibly.
Starting back in that kind of Easter time heading up to... Because that's when it was most successful.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Even those episodes that kind of went out, you know, during the start of summer, I remember still coming in at a fairly respectable 5-6 million viewers.
You know,
it's... I agree. I mean, I think there's been a lot... I mean, Doctor Who magazine every month has been sort of... You can tell where Tom Spilsbury thinks Doctor Who should be, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
And I agree. I think it should very much be that kind of... Before mum and dad go out, before, you know, grown adults go out, and, you know, at a time when kids are still awake and still, you know, open to a wonderful television programme.
Yeah. You know when you're at when you've got a night out and you have a pre-drink.
Yes.
Having said that, I don't know, maybe that's just a Scottish thing of having a drink before you start drinking. Having your maximum amount of units allowing your unit allowance
before
for the day
even leave
before
the
you
house.
Even yeah. Doctor Who is kind of like the lovely pre-drink.
Yes.
Before you have your evening, you have it. You're stoked. You feel heady and buoyed, and then you go out. And it sets you up nicely for a great evening out. Like, that's what Doctor Who is.
Yeah, I agree.
So that was just one of the many things. There was also this other great question somebody asked. And I don't want to be too harsh on the guy, because I think he maybe had something, a little kind of mentally off.
Well,
I don't know how to say it, I think he was on the spectrum.
He's an older Doctor Who fan, Ben. There's possibly a very good
chance. No, he was a young guy. He was maybe in his 20s or something. And when he said he asked a question, when he stood up for his question, he didn't ask a question. He just said that he didn't like Time of the Doctor, and then asked Toby Whithouse and Jamie Matheson, "And who are you?"
Fuck me.
His question. And Moffat, so Moffat just said to him, "Oh mate, whoever you paid in that charm school, I think you should go back and get your money back because it has not worked."
That's stunning. It's funny because I read Robert Ince's blog, which we shared on the Twitter page the other day, about visiting the Doctor Who festival with his son. And yeah. So it was this.
I saw him there. Yeah, saw him and his son and Stuart Lee and Bridget Christie. Oh, and their two children were there as well.
There you go. You did see people you knew, Ben.
Wow. Yeah.
But that whole idea of that, you know, like it's this wonderful thing for children, this sort of shield and all that kind of thing. That's great. And then some grown adults come along and ruin it during the Q&A.
Yeah, but the thing is, the writer's thing was really great, because as a writer, as someone who does writing as well, there were some, Jamie Matheson in particular, there were some cracking just bits of information and motivational texts and, you know, just bits of advice that were really great.
Yeah.
It wasn't very well attended, actually. I think a lot of people thought it was just the writer, so we'll give it a miss, because it's not Peter Capaldi.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, but I mean the whole thing. I mean, I don't know if it was maybe just the day I went, or it was down across the board. But the for the panels, the room, the big room at the XL was half full, and it didn't seem nearly as busy, which was great. I mean, so it wasn't as congested as it was at the 50th anniversary, but it didn't seem like the uptake was nearly as big. But it was still great. And the panel at the end, Toby Haydock. Is a great interviewer and was exactly what was needed for. Because do you remember how irritating Dallas Campbell was at the 50th anniversary as a host? He presented Dallas Campbell from
who?
I don't know, Bangles the Theory on BBC One. He was the host of the morning the Monsters and FX shows
with Danny Hargreaves.
Shut up! I want to hear what Danny Hargreaves has to say. Toby Haydock was the perfect host, because he just seemingly just allowed Peter, he just allowed the cast to talk and do some stuff. But again, it was the thing lived or died on the strength of the questions, and people were only asking questions for Peter Capaldi. And so you've got Ingrid Oliver, Michelle Gomez, Stephen Moffat, Jenna Coleman sitting there like they'd... You know, it was, well, at one point, I think Jenna Coleman just kind of was just staring off into space, and then she got asked the question, and she didn't hear it. she thought it was just for Capaldi. But there was a great moment at the end where they brought on a massive bouquet of flowers for her, and because as a cast said goodbye to her.
Oh, that's nice.
So there was a real kind of sadness about it.
Well, I suppose, because that's probably her last official engagement for Doctor Who.
Yeah, I mean, she's finished filming.
Uh-huh.
And... she wasn't originally going to be part of this, was she? It was only announced really quite...
She was only confirmed like a couple of weeks ago, I think, wasn't she?
Yeah, yeah. So it was great, but I mean, I guess like the main thing I got out of it was, and this is I don't want to sound all soppy and stuff. I mean, there's been like,
oh, go on.
There's been some really bad stuff that's happened. I want to be careful how I phrase this, because you know, like. What the attacks in Paris do not need is a ham-fisted commentary by a Doctor Who podcaster, really. But
yeah,
these things affect people, and they have the news of that kind of thing affected me more than I thought. Not that I'm heartless, but you kind of think it's another country, so it's not as close to you as it could be. But it does affect you, and it did affect me. And it was just great walking round the XL Centre and seeing such a positive... I mean, I don't know what people were saying on Twitter and Facebook, probably being cunts like always, but in public, when people are together, like, there was just such a great feeling of community, a great feeling of spirit and friendliness and joy. And as much as people are going into theatres and gunning people down and blowing people up, there were also a lot of kids at this thing with their mums and dads. And as parents, they were not doing half bad to some of these kids, because there was some real joy. Some of these kids just, you know, they seemed like the parents had done a good job and they were in safe hands and they were going to grow up to be all right. You know, because there was just such an almost tangible joy going about the place. Just this wonderful. This is what I'm saying at the start. It's almost spiritual. I suppose I get why people do have religion. It is ultimately a community for them. It's somewhere where they can feel like they belong. And I went on my own, And I didn't feel alienated or oppressed or unconnected or anything. It just felt great. It was nice to be an observer. And what I observed was a lot of positivity when the news and social media really are broadcasting the exact opposite.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although one thing, and I don't know, like, I had a really bad night's sleep before. Maybe this is why. I think I was just tired and emotional because I had a really bad night's sleep before going to it. Like something like me, I maybe managed like 2 or 3 hours. And by the end of it, I stuck around for the cosplay competition at the end because I just wanted to see everyone dressed up in their costumes and all that stuff. It was great, I tell you, the gift of the war doctor. Now, if you're an older bearded guy, just shove on a leather jacket and you're the war doctor, my friend. The war doctors that were walking about were fucking exemplary. But some of the costumes were absolutely magic. There was a guy dressed as a scarecrow, which was great. What else was there? Somebody had come as the queen from The Vampire of Venice.
Oh, right,
Vampires,
wow.
Of Venice. It's like proper big Renaissance dress, all beaded and diamond. And what else was there? Well, okay, so, but that's the thing. I just nearly burst out crying, right? Because they had, at the end of it, they had the age groups come on and announce a winner. And it was all the kind of like the kind of 15s and overs and the 18s and overs and the kind of the older stuff like that. But they had an under fives competition. And a wee guy came on dressed as the 10th Doctor, and there was a wee guy dressed as the 5th Doctor. And then the last guy that got up was a Jadoon, and it was the cutest thing I've ever seen. And it was, the Jadoon costume was, you could see it was completely made, right? It wasn't bought, but it was fucking excellent. Now, I'm not saying as an under five that he'd done it himself. He'd obviously been helped, but my Christ, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. It was a proper wee kind of like homemade kind of that skirted outfit that they have, and a proper like looks like papier mache Jadoon helmet, yeah. Rhino helmet. And I thought, well, this guy's gonna win it. And then and also when they said, so what's your name, and it goes Dominic Jadoon, and they went, okay, Dominic. And then he goes, all right, Dominic. And he went, no, my name's Josh. His name is Josh, right? And he'd given his cosplay character a name, Dominic the Jadoon. And, like, everyone just, the hearts just melted in the arena.
Oh, man.
And then they give the fucking prize to the 5th Doctor. The wee boy dresses the 5th. Now, I'm not about to say that one little boy deserved the prize more than the other, right? But the 5th Doctor, he'd obviously, his parents had just bought him a tiny version of the 5th Doctor's costume, where this other guy, like him and his dad and mum, had obviously went proper to town on getting this thing. And they get, and I went, okay, well, fine, but they'll give a prize. They're under fives, so they're going to give a prize to everybody else. No, they didn't. So I was standing at the back, because it was all kind of all in the round, this competition, and all I see is them from the back, and all I see is little Dominic Jadoon's wee rhino head falling.
Oh, man.
And I don't know, I can't see, the guy's got a mask on, so maybe it's not, but all I could see from the body language at the back is that suddenly Dominic Jadoon was really sad that he hadn't won. And I was like, oh my god, I just wanted to go up to the wee boy and go, don't walk away from this thinking that your costume isn't good, because yours is cracking, right? And I just thought, well, this is such bullshit. An under fives competition where, like, they actually run it as a competition rather than a bit of fun. And this wee guy's going to go away thinking that, like, that nobody liked his outfit, that he'd spent a bit of... Sorry, I'm welling up here now.
Like, we're recording this over the phone, so Ben can't see me right now, but I'm almost going myself.
Oh, I mean, I can't get the image of it. I can't get the image out of my head, because all I see is him from the back and just this little rhino head suddenly falling. As he looks at his own costume and goes, oh, but I quite liked it. So, oh, man.
We all liked it, Dominic Jadoon.
Dominic, but then I feel sad for this, but I wanted to go up and punch another 5-year-old. So, I mean...
You've not softened that much then.
No, but I mean, like, you know, I feel all sad about one 5-year-old, and then like, another 5-year-old can, like, go and fuck himself. Well, not, but you know what I mean. But no, like, I don't know, I just felt, I probably just the lack of sleep, but I just felt that I got emotionally and mentally, I got a lot out of this weekend.
Great.
Which I kind of felt sad when I was going, when I went on social media, people were going, it wasn't worth the money. And I thought it was, and I enjoyed it, and it was good fun.
You get what you put in, I think, in all of these things. And I think if you're there and you're counting how much money you've spent and what you're getting in return and all that kind of thing, fuck you, you know? Like, yeah, fine, sometimes, you know, you pay for something, it doesn't work. And you know, that's fine. That's a justified complaint.
Yeah.
But from everything I've seen on social media, and it's not just the official Doctor Who fucking Twitter feed, it's everybody. It's people like you. It's people like Robin Ince. It's people like Crystal, you know, the host of the fan show. People are sharing.
I've got a lot of time for Crystal. I like the Doctor Who fan show. But she was the one who awarded the prize to that little fifth Doctor.
Controversial.
So if we ever, because I know that you know her through your missus. If there's ever a meeting, it's the first thing I'm going to be bringing up with her. Just going to go, so, Dominic Jadun's costume wasn't good enough, was he? Because you fucking fifth Doctor. Yeah, fucking.
We have to make this happen. And then bring on Dominic the Jadun at the end.
I'm not going to try and find a 5-year-old on social media.
No, I wouldn't advise. I certainly wouldn't advise.
Because that. I was tempted there to try and track him down and see if we could get an interview with him. But, like, what am I thinking? No. It was a great event. And some of the costumes. Oh, yeah, there was a guy, I think I said this on Twitter, there was a guy who had an absolutely cracking Eighth Doctor from the Night of the Doctor cosplay going on.
But was he not like 8 years old or something, you said?
No. He was maybe like 14, something like that. He was a bit older. But yeah, I mean, like, it was just, I was in a thoughtful mood that day, and it just filled my head with the right sorts of thoughts.
Excellent.
It was a very positive experience.
And do you know what? Isn't that just like Doctor Who in a nutshell? Just something that...
Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, like, we're going to go on and talk about the episode now. And I know I see that it's got a lot of shitty reaction to it.
Yeah.
And I just was so pumped for it when I finally sat down to watch it. So I didn't get to see it until, so I didn't see it Saturday. I saw it after the Doctor Who thing on Sunday. So it would have had to have been proper shit for me to have not liked it, because I was so pumped for Doctor Who.
Yeah,
for that episode. And so when I first watched it, I really enjoyed it. It was it was really great.
Well, I am the opposite to you, not in the enjoyment. I enjoyed it as well, but the reason I enjoyed it so much is that I was expecting to hate it. And the reason I was expecting to hate it was because it's a, you know, found footage, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, a new ground for Doctor Who, which is always something to celebrate. But I just think that in cinema, found footage has had its day, but yet it rumbles on and rumbles on.
Well, what is it now? How many Paranormal Activity films?
5 or 6.
It's more than that, I think.
I think it is.
I've seen
now.
4, and having a Wikipedia.
There's Paranormal Activity 1 to 4.
Yeah.
Then there's Paranormal Activity, the marked ones, and then there was whatever one came with the Ghost Dimension.
I think there's another 3 of them after. But then I think they're like the American Pies after, like, the wedding one, where it's all straight to video kind of style. It's not actual cinema releases. But yeah, no, sorry, yeah, yeah.
All that kind of thing. I mean, I love the Blair Witch Project. I still think the Blair Witch Project stands up very well today.
Yeah.
So I was really expecting to hate it. I was expecting to just be there nitpicking all the way through, going, well, who's he talking to? And, you know, and what is that? And that was going on. However, as a result of that, I became part of the mystery. So then the plot twists, when they came, when there is no helmet cams, there is no, you know, I was like, holy shit, you know, what the hell, what? And I just went along with it. And I think it is one of those Doctor Who episodes that you either buy into the concept straight away, or you don't, and you're kind of left a bit behind. And there's been a lot of complaints about how the end, the end was too rushed and blah, 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 blah. It wasn't. It explains exactly what was happening. You know, he set all these things up to make it an enjoyable entertainment.
Yeah.
So that people watch it, get infected by the thing, and, you know, he will destroy the human race.
Yeah.
And I would much rather have this kind of ambiguity at the end of a Doctor Who episode, which is done in a different style, than have it break its own rules for a last 5 minutes in which the Doctor is in the TARDIS and, you know, figures it all out.
Yeah.
You know, it sticks to all the rules that it sets out for itself. Some of them are a bit ropey, don't get me wrong, but it sticks to it, and it it demolished each and every one of my found footage criticisms one by one, and I was like properly like wrong footed at every turn, and I loved, and as a result of it, I came out of it really, really enjoying it.
Yeah. I mean, I wish they'd gone for a more. Okay, I'm gonna divorce my emotional approach to the episode with what I actually kind of critically took from it.
Sure.
If it was a found footage thing, I think it would have been nice if it looked completely different, like it was shot on videotape. Like the whole episode had a completely different look to all the other episodes in terms of the way they've treated the film.
Yeah, which it didn't.
Which it didn't do that. It would have been nice also if maybe we'd seen a bit more of, not necessarily the monster, but atmospheric shots where monsters are in the background. Because for me, when they'll look down our corridor and you'll catch like a glimpse, but too short a glimpse of the monster. Mm-hmm. Like they should have really played up the more atmospheric, you know, like just if essentially the camera is the sleep in your eye, play up the kind of how a curious human would look at the situation, which is maybe like immediately look away from something, but then like look back, try and get a handle on what it is before running off, you know, like it just seemed like the monster, the more atmospheric bits, the stuff that was scary as opposed to like the monster being shown and attacking, but they just didn't show those elements for long enough to really creep you out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know, I guess it would have been nice if it didn't look like just a generic base with generic people in it. Especially so soon after, Under the Lake and Before the Flood, it just basically looks like that crew with none of the personality, and none of the interest that the base kind of had. You know, I can completely understand why some people thought it was boring, because it does look like all the other base. Episodes that the Capaldi series has done.
Yeah, I understand that criticism as well. I think it could have been a bit pacier. There was a lot of standing around talking.
Yeah.
I think, which is, you know, fine. I know that sounds a ridiculous complaint in a podcast where we've often talked about how fast new Doctor Who can sometimes be, but there was an awful lot of standing around talking. Yeah. I think, like you say, visually, it wasn't quite as dynamic as it could have been for something that is completely breaking with the format of the show. That's certainly something I felt, and obviously everything essentially being shot on high definition video cameras, film cameras for television, rather than proper sort of handheld GoPros or something like that,
And they still kept the editing pace very quick as well. Mm-hmm. So it kind of just seemed like a normal episode, rather than the thing that you get in found footage, which is maybe like longer takes or shots with far more interesting angles. And conceivably, if it was the very dust in the air itself which was recording this, they could have done anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if it was the dust, maybe once we were exposed to the idea, if they'd done like, I don't know, a really jerky but floaty arc around a character while they were speaking, or, you know, I don't know, like a shot coming down from the ceiling, going to the floor as the dust would fall from the ceiling to the floor. You know, I don't know, something like that. You know.
I mean, yeah. It's. I think it's a very interesting bit of Doctor Who, and that's to be lauded. And I think they slightly fumbled the execution, but I really don't understand this, because there's been some properly, I mean, there always is, I suppose, after every Doctor Who episode, but some properly just like, oh, this was shit, this was terrible, oh, I turned it off halfway through and I've deleted the recording, all that kind of thing. And I'm like...
we both know who you're talking about.
And if you're listening, hiya.
I mean, I get it. I mean, I don't know if I hadn't had that great Doctor Who experience before watching it, how I would have felt about it, because it is a lot of style over substance, and the style... is a bit lacking, I think. And I can see why people might be bored of it, because there's not a lot of time spent with any interesting characters.
No.
You know, because, so, like, the Doctor and Clara are always great, but the base mob are boring. They're boring people. And Reese Shearsmith disappears from, like, the middle of the story.
Yeah.
And he's an incredibly watchable, incredibly...
He's fantastic in it.
But they kind of dispatch him. And then he shows up at the end, and the end improves as a result. But you mostly spend the episode in the company of a lot of people you don't give a shit about.
I mean, I think that's kind of the point, in a way, is that they're just there to die. But then I think also, if the point is that what he's doing is to make it something entertaining to watch, maybe he should have chosen some more interesting people.
Yeah, well,
some people that would have butted heads, or some people that would have, you know.
No, I was thinking about this. I mean, really, this episode is critic proof, essentially, because.
Well, I don't know. There's certain lines in it that kind of give the critics rope to hang Mark Gatiss with. Such as, I wish I hadn't.
Well, I mean, also at the end when he's going, wasn't it exciting? Next bit of excitement, big shocks and thrills, you know. And if you've not experienced that, then that seems very hollow at the end. But essentially, it is a monster who has made its own television show, with the only limitations being the location where the monster is and the things that the monster can physically achieve itself. So. The problem itself is the Sandman, or the Sandmen,
yes.
those things. The adventure can only be as good as what's achievable by the Sandmen.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to create something that's exciting for people to watch, there is only so far that they can go. But, you know, possibly they should have done something more I think they should have pulled out all the stops. Like, it should have been by the end of it so bizarrely exciting, so, like, utterly, utterly off the wall, that you're just going, what the fuck is going on? But, you know, you can only achieve what that monster can legitimately achieve.
I think you've hit the nail on the head
for
one of my niggles with it, because I think the idea of a Doctor Who villain creating its own episode of Doctor Who as a weapon is a fucking brilliant idea for a Doctor
Absolutely,
Who story. A fantastic idea. But I think, you know, the whole idea of it being held within the digital stream or something like that, they should have done more with that. It should have been a monster that could, you know, rather than being made out just... I still don't really know what it's made out of. Did sleep in your eye?
Yeah.
So basically, if you don't sleep, you dry out and become this kind of horrible...
Yeah, it just engulfs your body. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, fine, that's an interesting enough idea, but it's... With that idea with this story doesn't quite tally up.
No, I mean, the problem is the monster. Like, if the monster has to be far more fleshed out and dynamic for it to work. But to be honest, thank God. I mean, how boring would an episode of Doctor Who made by the Daleks be? Or the Cybermen?
Yes.
You know,
that's
like,
true.
On paper, that sounds cracking. Oh, the Daleks, it's going to be shot from a Dalek point of view. That gets old very quickly.
Yes.
So what we got with the Sandman was a good idea, but it has to be, I don't know, imagine if it had been the Wire from The Idiot's Lantern, something that is inherently about television, so you can, like, throw in, like, weird edits creative angles and all that kind of stuff. But then, I mean, you know, what I'm saying about critic proof is that the way it looks is the way that the monster wants it to look.
Yeah.
And in the end, it doesn't want to pull out all the stops. It just wants to keep you watching long enough for you to have the code fully embedded in your consciousness. It doesn't matter if you actually give a shit about it or like it or not. It just wants to get its murderous message across. So it does just enough to keep you watching and be compelled, but not enough for you to go, well, see you later, the Day of the Doctor. This is the new number one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just seems like it's such a halfway house of a lot of good ideas.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I did, like I say, I was rapt by the story, and it, you know, I was taken along because I was constantly trying to see where the errors were, and then actually there was reasons for the errors, and I like the idea of like I say, of a villain creating its own episode of Doctor Who as a weapon. I think that's a great idea. But I think the Sandmen, disgusting, and you know, as they looked when you did get a glimpse of them, just weren't the right villains.
No, not in motivation and not in execution either. They are, you know, I mean, they're designed to be weird things, shadowy in the background. But what that actually means is they're really just generic. It's just really generic. It's you can't imagine that a lot of time had been put into designing that.
The whole idea is like, well, there's no real reason for why they're doing what, I mean, I suppose they're hungry or whatever, so they want to just consume humanity and all that kind of thing. Fine, fair enough, we've seen that plenty of times before. It would have been nice to have had, I mean, Reese Shearsmith is excellent and is definitely one of the best things in it, if not the best thing in it, and that bit at the end where he takes his glasses off and rubs his eye and his face falls off is a really cool, iconic Doctor Who moment, I think. It's but it just, like you say, the motivation of the monsters is just a bit meh. If it had been something a bit more exciting and a bit more kind of deadly, then, because I mean, Gatiss is apparently writing a sequel or a follow-up to this. I don't know, it's hard to get excited about that, because I think this idea was fine, but I don't know where else you can take it.
Yeah, they're not monsters that scream to be back.
No, they're not. But, you know, we'll see. Open mind.
Yeah. Oh no! Another thing. I don't know if this is a criticism. It was also quite confused a lot of the time. Elaine, the actress Elaine Tan, who is it? Nagata is the character's name. Both her and Jenna Coleman have very soft-spoken Northern accents.
Yeah.
And at times, I didn't know which one was talking.
Yeah. Okay.
Was it Clara talking or was it Nagata talking? I apparently wasn't the only one. I watched it again this morning with the BBC subtitles on, and when Nagata's talking, when Nagata's talking, they give the line to Clara on screen. The words on screen,
right, like
Clara saying them. So obviously, people are. If viewers, if you're looking for a particular instant, when the Doctor and Clara show up and the troops approach them. Nagata says, "Are you crew? Are you crew?" I thought it was Clara saying that. In which case, why is she saying that? But no, it was Nagata saying it. It's a bit of a quibble, but I just thought, like, it just seemed a bit confused. I think if you're going to shoot a found footage thing, the key thing is that every one of the actors has to have a very distinct package of skills, personalities, and voice, so you know who it is.
Because the camera's not always going to be on them,
You know, because I think a lot of people are
out of shot.
Is it also worth saying as well that so we had with Under the Lake and Before the Flood, we had the first deaf actor in Doctor Who was Sophie Stone, and this is the first time we've had the first transsexual actor with Bethany Black. Is it trans? I want to get this right. Is this the correct term? Is it transsexual?
Transgender.
And whilst I think that Sophie Stone as Cass was very positive, Bethany Black's performance was great. I enjoyed it. But I kind of felt like it was a bit of a shame that they got a transgender actor to be such a grunt, essentially, to be a pitiable and deplorable. I know that the character was not being a transgender character, but they got someone who was transgender to play a pretty disliked character by the rest of the crew.
Who then makes a noble sacrifice?
Who does make a noble sacrifice? But I thought they could have done something a bit more positive. But I mean, my other thought with the whole thing is that yet again we have a human crew who are a shower of dicks. Why does the Doctor even bother with the planet Earth? You know, I'm not saying that I would like every encounter with Earth to be with goody, you know, like a goody two-shoes Star Trek crew. I love Star Trek, But even I can sometimes find the relentless kind of morals and positivity of the show a little trying.
Yeah.
But there is very little redeeming qualities these days in the various human crews or people or whatever that the Doctor encounters. And you just think, fuck's sake, I mean, why does he bother? Well, he saves the day, he saves modern Earth, and then, I don't know, a couple of hundred years later, they're breeding... They're breeding soldiers and, you know, breeding intelligence out of people, or, you know, that kind of thing. So I think I was a bit kind of, like, down on the crew when I watched it as well. I just wished that they'd done with Bethany Black, whom, I mean, I don't know her, but she's a comedian, and once or twice we've been on gigs together, and she's a wonderful person. And I just wanted to see her being given a more positive character, I guess. I don't know. Because she's also really good. She was in Banana. Is Banana the kind of the spin-off thing from Cucumber?
Yes.
Russell T. Davis is sure. She was great in that, you know. But, you know, I don't know if that's... I don't know. Listeners, I don't know. Do I mean anything by that? I'm not sure. I don't know. Did you have the same thoughts? I don't know. Sorry, I felt like I've mouthed off an awful lot.
Yeah, okay. I was just thinking there. I was just thinking about whether or not... Because it's that age-old thing, isn't it? It's that, you know, should you make a point of hiring a trans actor, or should you just hire a trans actor to just play a role? Because it is the most normal thing in the world. It is an actor playing a role, and it shouldn't matter.
No, I just thought they seemed like a missed opportunity to have hired... So I've hired someone like Bethany Black, but to not do... Not celebrate it.
Because of her skill set more than anything else.
Yeah.
I think that's the positive statement I think we want to make about that, is that she's a great personality that is sadly wasted in that role. Yeah. Let's go with that. I don't want to offend anybody because I know how sensitive the whole issue is. So I kind of wanted to.
No, I mean, I'm not setting out to offend anybody. It's just that one of the things, I guess why I'm saying this is that one of the things I took away from the panels. The Doctor Who Festival is that during the writing panel and then during the cast panel, twice the performance of Sophie Stone was brought up by some hearing impaired people who were in attendance, and it was obviously they were obviously just really chuffed to have somebody like them represented on screen and in such a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And I don't think until I really heard people standing up with a microphone and saying to Moffat and Capaldi, this meant something to us, did I really appreciate what Sophie Stone did in those episodes. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had that hat on when I was watching Bethany Black in this Seed Sleep No More.
No, you definitely have a point there. It's just, I don't know.
Anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Should we bring it in? I mean, have you got anything else you want to say about it?
I was nicely surprised. I don't think it's a perfect piece of Doctor Who. But those, you know, if we're being honest, are few and far between.
No. I mean, it looked like an experiment. It was probably not that successful. The worst you can say about it is that it is the most middle-of-the-road Doctor Who by numbers. Like, everything about it seems generic, really.
It's Doctor Who by numbers that's given a kind of fresh twist that's sadly not realised in as full and as an exciting a way as it could have been.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of my feeling on it, sort of a couple of days after.
Yeah. But it was still funny. There were still great lines, a great performance. Like, Capaldi talking about the attitudes that cultures have to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Was riveting. It was, you know, like that whole speech where they're in the freezer and he's talking about, you know, everybody enjoys sleep except for humans who try to barter it away. You know,
sleep is something
to be cherished. All of that kind of that stuff was brilliant.
You know, I know you said last week was his kind of defining Doctor moment, but I think it's all these little bits where you just give him just some great dialogue to just reel off in just this amazing way, and that, you know, he's a great Doctor, and long may he reign. And I look forward to episode 11 where we've just got him reeling off reams of dialogue.
Yeah, So this is definitely a one-parter.
This is a single-parter, I believe.
Yeah. So there's nothing that we're going to find in this episode making its... You know, there is no link on to the next episode now.
Not as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
But hey, you know, isn't that part of the fun of this series? Because you and I have been trying to stay as spoiler-free as possible.
Yeah. Maybe that's also one of the, again, I don't want to see problems with it, is that I kind of wanted, not that I wanted it to be a two-parter, but having a single episode again after the what I feel is the reward of having a story told over a longer period of time, it was a bit harder to readjust to that time frame again.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, because we've had a whole series of sort of slower-paced Doctor Who in the way, I guess, we kind of remember Doctor Who being in the olden days. So that you're kind of brought back, and it's almost like whiplash. You're kind of, oh, right, yeah, we're back into this kind of...
Well, the when we have the single episode, the supporting cast have to be, or the supporting characters have to be drawn with such broad brushstrokes, whereas you get... the characters get a chance to breathe when it's longer. So I'm saying that maybe the characters seemed a bit boring, but if I'd gotten more time to got to know them, maybe this would have been a more rewarding experience.
I mean, it'd be interesting to watch Face the Raven this weekend if that is a single parter, because there's part of me that thinks it might, the season finale might be a three-parter.
Yeah.
But possibly. Or alternatively, as we've seen in the Next Time trailer, this isn't a spoiler, I don't count Next Time trailers as spoilers, we've got Maisie Williams back. So does this count as the third part to The Girl Who Died and The Woman Who Lived? Who knows? So I guess we will discuss that next week, probably.
Yes, well, we'll see. We'll see. Maybe we won't be talking again for another 3 weeks. We don't know.
Yeah, but that's nothing to do with the podcast.
So yeah, all in all, it was fine. I see why people didn't like it, but also
I can
calm
see
down,
why people
guys.
Didn't
it
like
wasn't
it.
That bad.
Yeah, that's the point I want to make. It's like, I can see why you didn't enjoy it, but do you want to maybe calm down a little bit?
Yeah. What is the problem? Like, it's not just us, is it? There is like a proper amount of bile and bad reaction to, for like the last 2 years, people have been properly. Like, anger is the first thing that's happened after episodes have gone out.
Yeah, and it's a very... I mean, I keep saying it and keep saying it, is that, you know, as you've beautifully demonstrated in this episode, that, you know, Doctor Who is something that brings a great deal of joy to a great many people. But yet, there's just always some arsehole somewhere who just gets a bee in their bonnet. And I think... Do you know what I think it is? You know, I've worked in customer service for about... devastatingly long amount of time, and there's that thing that they always tell you in customer service training, you know, complaint is shared more than a compliment, and I think that's it. I think, you know, sometimes we kind of forget, and with Twitter and with Facebook and with fucking Outpost Gallifrey, you know, you take to all these things to have a moan, to have a fucking grump, and to just, because there's nobody there at the other end, it's you're just hammering words through a keyboard, into a screen, you're howling into the abyss. There's no filter.
Yeah.
So I think that's why there is this anger. There's no time for somebody on the, like me and you sitting in a pub, you know, like last week with the Subterran stratagem, you go, well, okay, it's not that bad, calm down. You know, that kind of thing. That's not there when it's this online thing. So I think that's why so much bile and so much hatred comes through. Which is why, you know, I tweeted Robin Ince and said, you know, it's lovely to hear that Doctor Who is, you know, still entertaining the people that it's actually for. You know, just if you don't like it, you don't like it. But can we just maybe, can we all just fucking calm down? Because it's not doing my health any good. And I'm sure it's not doing your health any good either.
I suppose there's been something... I'm not going to get into this. I was going to say that female fandom seems to be far more positive than male fandom.
Yes, I completely agree with you.
I don't know. That's positive stereotyping, really, isn't it? That's unhelpful.
It is, but I think... I mean, it's still... Yeah, fine, it's still stereotyping. It's still unhelpful. But I think the sort of... I don't know how much of this is going to get kept in, but it's just nice to say these things. I think, you know, internet-based anger, certainly about genre television, so like, you know, about Doctor Who, about Game of Thrones, about whatever, a lot of that anger, a lot of that unpleasantness is very much white middle-class men.
I think so, yeah.
Let's not be around the bush. That's essentially what a lot of this is. Because, let's face it, there's no struggle there. There's no other problems, really, if you're a white middle-class man.
Yeah. Well, at the Doctor Who Festival, the various panels, there was a lot of thank yous offered from the audience. a lot of people who, instead of asking questions, would say to the cast and the crew that certain story elements or certain performances or issues that were tackled, or just the show in general, have provided an impetus for change in life. People who can change things in their life, change their life in general, mm-hmm. allow them to see something new, approach life in a different manner. And, you know, not one of the people who stood up was a white middle-class guy. You know, it was all kind of older women or kids with disabilities, or, you know, people who have suffered some kind of problem. So, yeah, you're right. It is something about, you know, once you don't have a struggle, you start to just eat yourself.
You try to find yeah. one. You try to find something to be angry yeah. about, something to be upset about. Yeah. And it's all, you know. Anyway.
Well, yeah, exactly. Let's end it on that bizarre note. I mean, okay, I guess the bottom line is, I can see why people probably didn't enjoy it, but really, it wasn't that bad. No, it wasn't that bad. Come on, what's going on? Like, you know, like, you could still show it to somebody and say, this is Doctor Who, and probably, if they were open to it, they would like Doctor Who after it, you know, and you wouldn't feel embarrassed showing it to them.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't as ambitious as it should have been. It was executed as well as it could have been, but, I mean, I'll watch it again, and it'll be fine. Yeah. Wow, the Doctor Who Festival has really changed me. I've got, like, this kind of, like, Doctor Who zen feeling.
I love it. Now. It's nice. Yeah. It's a nice outlook.
Yeah. I'm going to keep Dominic Jadoon as my mental mascot now, you know. And at any point, I think I'm losing perspective on Doctor Who, I'm just going to go, think of Dominic. Not in that creepy voice that I just did. Not like that.
No, please don't do that.
Like, I'm just... He's that little Jadoon boy is an example to us all, which is, come on, guys, just enjoy it, because it is enjoyable.
If there's one thing I want you to take away from this episode, ladies and gentlemen, it's that sentence just there. That little Jadoon, what was it you just said? That little Jadoon boy has a lesson for us all. Yes, he does.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, thanks for listening as ever. I've been Mark.
I've been Ben.
And I think we should dedicate this episode to Dominic the Jadoon.
Yeah, yeah. You were robbed, mate. You were absolutely robbed.
You were robbed. See ya. See you next week.
See you later.